This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the WASP, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in trouble. Tonight's guest, novelist, social welfare critic, Julius Horwitz. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. These are the words of Thomas Emerson, the fictitious yet too real black man from the book The Wasp. Of course, WASP means white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. We quote, "Dear white man with no ears, I write to you because you have no ears. You cannot hear me. For whatever is rotten in American life is rotten because you permit it to be so. There is no other group in America, white man with no ears, like you, WASP, which is a greater title than all the grand titles of Europe. For you control all of the power there is to control. Your disease, then, is that you are rotting. There is rot in your bones. The black disease is isolation. He is isolated from himself, his family, his children, his work, his women, his dreams. This is the black disease that destroys the black children. I write to you, white man, because you have no ears." Unquote. These lines were written by a white man, Julius Horwitz, who has served as consultant to the Majority Leader of the New York Senate on problems of social welfare and to the New York State Joint Legislative Committee on problems of public health and Medicare. Mr. Horwitz is standing by in New York to answer your questions on WASP and white racism. Mr. Horwitz, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
And thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me down.
Mr. Horwitz, what is the WASP disease?
The WASP disease, as I see it, is a what I call, in the book itself, a solemn delusion that somehow there is a God-given difference between white men and black men that makes the black man inferior to the white man. And it's this solemn delusion that's perpetuated itself for a couple hundred years in this country. And what I feel is the real sickness of the white mind today in America.
Is the WASP disease just racism, or is it the whole value system?
It's a whole value system which is directed against people who are disadvantaged in this country. It seems hard to believe, and I kind of stumbled on it in my work, but I'm convinced that America turns its back really on its disadvantaged people. It hides them, it makes them invisible to other Americans, it creates social welfare programs that don't work, its welfare system is a horrendous kind of institution that destroys people. No, it's a total social problem rather, you know, than limiting it to black racism.
Do you feel that it is too late for any solution for the black-white problem?
No, I don't feel it's ever too late for people to speak to one another.
What can be done?
Well, I think it's exactly that. Blacks and whites in America are too remote from one another. They've never really talked to each other. They don't know each other. They've used language and 1,000 subtleties to hide themselves from one another. And, that's the first step that has to be taken to just simply, well, what Emerson says in a book, you know, he says, white man with no ears. You never listen to me. He says, well, talk. You know, let's talk as man to man. I think once that begins to happen, we can see, you know, more fundamental changes take place.
We talked about the value system. Why has a system been devised where there are values for one group of people and another set of values for the second?
I think it's because of what Henry Adams once said in his Education. He says, America, the American is a man traveling at 60 miles an hour with his eye always on a curve in the road. And he wrote this in 1900. And I think Americans are afraid to turn back. They don't want to turn back and pick up disadvantaged people or problems or trouble. They're afraid. They're probably the biggest fear in this country, you know, is loss of security and income. And so the movement in this country from the Puritan days has always been forward and don't look back. Particularly don't look back on people that might drag you down. That's the key fear.
During this period of confrontation between blacks and white, the term WASP has become quite popular in describing the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And as we're discussing tonight, as we're conversing on the WASP being in trouble, do we include the white Anglo-Saxon Catholic?
Well, I use, you know, the title WASP because it's the majority population of America. But I think what, you know, what's true in the book and the distance between black and white is true of most white Americans and not just the Protestant American.
Let's talk for a moment, sir, about our welfare system. Do you feel that our welfare system and all of the anti-poverty programs are just perpetuating the problems that black people are facing?
Well, I think the development of welfare in this country really ran parallel with the development, you know, slavery in the pre-Civil War days. The welfare system created a society of women. It made it necessary, actually, for men to abandon their families so the families could live. The welfare children suffer terrible grade retardation as compared to non-welfare children. And this actually was a program of the Southern slave owners, which was to dehumanize the male, to isolate the woman, and to keep the children from getting an adequate education.
In your book, The WASP, I'd like to quote a couple of lines from the main character, Emerson. And Emerson says, "Negro babies don't learn faster than white babies. They just learn the wrong things first. A man should not know about death until he is old enough to make death important. We die so that others can live, but only if we live before we die, which doesn't happen to many black men." I was thinking that today that in the new philosophy which is being exercised and being perpetuated by blacks in the sense that they wish to do their own thing, rightly or wrongly, this is the direction that they wish to go. And there are many people, many WASPs, who state that they would like to assist, but they feel to some degree alienated now because the blacks are no longer extending a hand to the whites to help. How do you feel about this new philosophy?
Well, I think, you know, some of it is all right, but what remains fundamental is the fact that the black man or the Negro, whatever name you want to use, is an American. And he's born here and this is his home. And you never really, you know, leave your home. And there can't really be, I don't think, any sharp division and any complete, you know, total kind of black culture in this country is divorced from the American culture. It's all part of, you know, the same pot. And I think this is, you know, something that's going on now, but I don't think it's fundamental.
After reading your book, I was greatly impressed with your ability to create the subtleties and to understand the subtleties of the black man. And I've discussed this with a number of black friends who agreed with me in terms of your ability to create the kind of character that you did with Emerson and your ability, as I said, to create the subtleties. And one of my friends even questioned me to the point where he kind of suspected you because he did not feel that a white man could have the kind of sensitivity to write the kind of book in which you wrote about the WASP. Now, as a white man, where you seem to understand a black man's situation, can we assume that this is an indication that there are others like you?
Well,
Or are you standing alone?
No, I don't feel I'm standing alone. I do feel that I've had, you know, more contact with blacks and, you know, many white people. But what I really wanted to do in the novel was to show that these subtleties shouldn't be taken by blacks as in the kind of sense that I've seen it taken, where there's a certain pride in being elusive and mysterious and remote from the white man, and the language is used to separate the two. I thought that if I could show in the novel that these subtleties didn't escape me, that the subtleties would lose their power, and another kind of dialogue and another kind of voice would take hold.
Our conversation tonight is The Wasp, The White Anglo-Saxon Protestant in Trouble. Our guest calling in from New York City is novelist, social welfare critic, Julius Horwitz. And before we turn over our night call numbers and allow you to exchange conversation and points with us tonight, I'd like to remind you that the sooner that you call in, the sooner that you will be able to be on the air with your comments as well as your questions. Our telephone numbers, if you're calling from the East and the Midwest, are area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. If you're calling from the West Coast, it's area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. And if you're calling us from New York, our local number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. We'll take our first call tonight from New Orleans. Mr. Savory is hearing Night Call over WDSU. Mr. Savory?
Good evening. And this the race issue, black and white, is small compared to the yellow race and the brown race, the red race, so on down the line, and the struggles between the different great global religions. And there are 9 or 10 of the big ones, and each of the big ones, including Christianity, has hundreds of splinter groups. So it, there are innumerable confrontations and the struggles going on within this world, and all we have to do is learn to live and let live, and let's love each other, not fight each other, regardless of race, creed, or color.
Well, sir, who has to do the loving?
Each of us, every day, from cradle to the grave.
All right, so thank you for calling. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our conversation tonight, The Wasp, The White Anglo-Saxon Protestant in Trouble. Our guest calling in tonight is novelist, social welfare critic, Julius Horwitz, the author of The Wasp. We'll take our next call from New York. Miss White is hearing Night Call over WRVR. Miss White?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Horwitz.
Good evening, Miss
White. I have a theory. I wonder if you had it ever had occurred to you that a part of the American dilemma is that the Negro in this country was not supposed to have flourished, especially after emancipation. Actually, I think the confrontation was to have been class in this country and not black and white. The Negro was supposed to have ended up like the Indian. And is that not one of the reasons for this great opening up of the shores to the Central Europeans in the year during the war, during the periods when so many immigrants were accepted to the country to take on the backbreaking and laboring work that the Negro, as the Negro disappeared. But instead of our disappearing, we flourished. And I think that's part of the dilemma, don't you? Have you ever looked into that? Perhaps you could see it more objectively than I can, but it's been a theory of mine.
What I do say, what Emerson says, rather, in the novel,
mm-hmm.
is that the American whites
mm-hmm.
killed and butchered the American Indian,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't kill and butcher
mm-hmm.
20 million Negroes, or
mm-hmm.
about 3 or 5 million Negroes during the Civil War period.
That's right.
There was no place left, you know, to hide bodies.
Yeah.
The cities were
yeah.
too built
yeah.
up. No, what You see, whatever has been true in the past, I think the truth is under, what I would call the heading of delusion.
Yeah.
In reference to the Negro. And we have to forget, you know, the whole crazy history of the American-white relations with the Negro.
I know, but the point is, of course, during slavery, they would not have butchered us because they were too valuable. But thrown on our own after emancipation, I don't think many people would have
liked it. Well, you see, the butchery after the Civil War took another form, which is the way America handles much of its disadvantaged population.
Mm-hmm.
The Negro became invisible to America.
That's it.
The American refused to see the Negro. He refused to see a man. He refused to see a woman.
Well, he died off, I think.
No, but you see, what you're talking about is very true, because psychologically, this is what the American did to the Negro.
Yes.
You see, he made him invisible. He made him non-human.
Yeah. Yeah.
He took the man and he called him boy.
Yeah.
He reduced his manhood.
Yeah.
He isolated the woman.
Yeah.
It was a whole inhuman act, which almost paralleled, you know, the destruction of the Indian, except one was physical and the other was psychological.
That's right. Yeah.
Ms. White, thank you for calling, ma'am.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Julius Horwitz, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz, after station identification. In our city and our state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble in our nation. Black and white trouble. Some people speak of racial tension. Some say poverty is the real problem. Some say law and order is giving away to anarchy in our streets. About the only thing on which most people agree is that there is a crisis and that we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes that you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from some people who should know what they're talking about. And so we bring you Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show where the public asks their questions and expresses their opinions to guest experts like Julian Bond, John Lindsay, Roy Innes, Joan Baez, and Godfrey Cambridge. Night Call, the nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation, each weeknight on this station. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz about racism, the white man's hang-up, the black man's burden. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our conversation tonight on Night Call, The Wasp, the White Anglo-Saxon Protestant in Trouble, with our guest, novelist, social welfare critic, Mr. Julius Horwitz, who also wrote the best-selling book in the best-selling novel, The Wasp. We'll take our next call from Lexington, Kentucky. Mr. Haney is hearing Night Call of WBKY-FM. Mr. Haney?
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Horwitz.
Good evening, sir.
I would ask you, I agree that that between the white and the Negro, that what the major problem comes down to is when they must confront each other, of course, as equals. And, of course, the Wasp, he just can't learn this. And, of course, there's so many people that do fall into this category now, today. And I wonder if there's really any practical way of attacking the problem. Do you see any practical means right now? What is being done practically?
Well, there are programs being done in a practical way. For example, the Urban Coalition nationally in New York City. There are programs, many programs, you know, particularly the one we're on now, which deals with this very problem of communication. This is going on all over the country. I have a feeling that, you know, it's gone on for a long time. But overriding all this is the kind of basic American delusion about race. And I think the end to this kind of delusion has to come really from the highest levels of, you know, American life and government. And it can't be, you know, what I would call plastic rhetoric or, you know, just bandwagon stuff. There has to be a confession almost of the idiocy of racism in this country at this stage of our, you know, civilization and culture.
Yes, and you spoke a moment ago of the aloofness, I guess you, I could say, that the American Negro sometimes assumes, and that he does his own thing, and he is his own person and type of individual sometimes. And it would seem to me that this might inhibit some people of other races who might attempt a communication. I wonder if you comment on this.
Well, yeah, I've felt most of my life that this was this behavior on the part of, you know, the black man was just as strange as the white behavior. And, you know, I could understand why a black man would do this, but when I worked, for example, with a number of Negro men, and we worked in very intimate circumstances, and I still saw this behavior, and I still didn't hear a clear, direct voice, you know, the man coming through. There was still this elusive tone. You know, I recognized, you know, that this was something very basic, and it's something which, you know, the black man has to look at just as much as the white man has to look at his ignorance.
I would like to ask you one more question.
Sure.
And the way I see it now, I see education playing a large role in eliminating a lot of the prejudices that we do have and that a lot of people are fostering and holding on to. And I wonder if you could comment on the role that is being played by education, or maybe what could be done. If it isn't being done.
Well, education is always seen, you know, as a panacea for trouble. And, you know, I have no argument that education can certainly do away with, you know, a lot of silly and stupid and ignorant notions we have about race. But the country needs more than education. There has to be something of greater warmth and intensity, something like William James might say, that comes out of the very stuff of life, that makes you feel and know that a thing is real. It would be the difference between, for example, desegregation, which is a cold, legal kind of act, and integration, which depends upon the feeling within a person to, you know, to integrate and to do something real and positive. So it's nothing, you know, that can be taught. It's something that has to merge out of, you know, the collective American experience.
So it has to come from higher up?
Well, I think it has to, all things, you know, sort of begin high, except now that I'm beginning to find out the very reverse in welfare, that the people on welfare are beginning to identify their own problems and are beginning to be their own spokesman, and they have brilliant insights into what the hang-ups are in welfare, and I think they're going to be the people, for example, to affect major changes in how welfare programs will be run in this nation. So you never know, for example, where this, you know, where new experience will come from, except that you always have to keep pushing for it and fighting for it.
I think you also have to note that when you talk about the black problem in America, that most white people have not thought of the problem as being the problem of the country, or I should say that they have never considered a personal problem per se. It's everybody else's problem except theirs. And when black people today are stating that we would rather do our own thing, it's from the standpoint that nothing else that has been tried has worked. And for the first time in the period of the history of the black man in this country, he can stand up and say, well, that he can be proud that he is black. For the first time, he is beginning to cultivate some dignity and some respect on his own. And I think at the same time, when we talk about the programs, what can be done, I think we have to recognize, too, that black people have become a bit tired of the surveys and the samplings and the reports, because very few of them have really shown dramatically what the problem is and where the solutions can derive.
Of course, who would better know what his needs are except the Negro himself?
This was a final observation or insight of Myrdal in The American Dilemma. He said Americans can make, you know, tremendous studies about the Negro problem, but the one thing they can't do is recognize the humanity of the Negro and to admit him into the American scheme.
Yes.
He said this is a line that's drawn and America hasn't crossed it yet. He wrote this in 1945, and I think it's still pretty much true today.
Mr. Haney, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
This is Night Call in New York. Our conversation tonight, the WASP, the white Anglo-Saxon president, Protestant rather, in trouble. And our guest calling in is novelist, social welfare critic, Mr. Julius Horowitz. We'll take our next call from Ferndale, Washington. Mr. Pinkerton is hearing Night Call over KERI-FM. Mr. Pinkerton?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening to both of you. I really enjoy your program very, very much.
Thank you, sir.
You've been talking about welfare. And there's a little problem that has kind of entered my mind. I had an occasion to be on welfare once due to a back injury and aid to dependent children, which is what a lot of people are under. And here in the state of Washington, we have to sign up for work details. And we are required to perform duties for the state in return for compensation when there are things to be done, like we worked in parks and state parks and cleaned up the litter on state highways and this sort of thing. And don't you feel that these people who have to turn to welfare for some reason, either they can't get a job or for some reason they can't hold one when they do get it, or they are prejudiced against in the area where they live, that this type of program should be carried on, where the thing that I hate to see is the Cadillac drive up to the welfare office and pick up the welfare check, you know? This type of thing where they just lay back and we just give them the money.
Well, you know, the Cadillac experience is rather rare. In New York, they had the mink coat scandals. And, you know, when you work in welfare and when you go into the homes of the people, and you see the real trouble they have, you realize, you know, that they're not living in the lap of luxury. And I myself, you know, would be opposed to putting people to work without giving them an adequate wage. I think if work can be found for men in parks or highways or roads or institutions or whatever it may be, that means should be found to provide them with a wage which they can maintain themselves and their families, instead of seeing to it that they work on a subsistence wage or even less in most states than subsistence. Here in New York, for example, we don't force men, you know, to work as a sort of acceptance, you know, of their application for public assistance. I really don't think that should be done.
Well, we weren't really forced to either.
Would your case have been rejected or denied if you refused to work?
No, it wouldn't have, but I felt an obligation myself because the people were helping me. And it was a matter of, at the time, I wasn't able to work at any type of strenuous job like I'm doing now. But a lot of times, you know, you read in the paper where they can't get employees for menial jobs, which do pay a salary. And I think these job opportunities ought to be made available, such as a gardener or institutional guards or runabout people for persons who don't have the educational training.
Well, I'm working now on a story about welfare in which I say that one of the big jobs, you know, welfare administration in this country is to create employment and to find employment and to sort of square up the individual with a job he can do. And this is one of the big jobs facing welfare in the country, the creation of employment for the people who can work, but to pay for this kind of work, you know, at a going salary, rather than have it be a kind of semi-enforced labor with the threat that your welfare might be taken away, you know, if you don't perform.
Yeah.
Mr. Pinkerton, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is NICOL in New York. Tonight, our conversation, The Wasp, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in trouble. Our guest, Mr. Julius Horwitz, will return to our guest and more conversation following station identification. Stay tuned for the NICOL Network.
More NICOL with Del Shields and guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz after station identification. Next week on NICOL, is war absurd? Does Czechoslovakia have a future? The Biafran mess, alcoholism, and Catholics and birth control. Monday, novelist-playwright Joseph Heller, author of Catch-22 and We Bombed in New Haven. Tuesday, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Harrison Salisbury, assistant managing editor of the New York Times, expert on the East-West confrontation. Wednesday, Miss Onima Megwa of the Republic of Biafra. Thursday, former alcoholic Frank Murphy. And Friday, Robert Hoyt, editor of the National Catholic Reporter on Catholics and birth control. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz about racism, the white man's hang-up, the black man's burden. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. Our conversation tonight, The Wasp, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in trouble. And our guest calling in tonight is the author of the book called The Wasp. He's novelist, social welfare critic, Mr. Julius Horwitz. We'll take our first call during this half hour from Tampa, Florida. Mr. Milner is hearing Night Call over WFLA. Mr. Milner?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
First of all, I'd like to tell you a little bit about me. I am an eighth generation Georgian. My ancestors took Georgia away from the Indians. I'm very proud of my heritage. All four of my great grandfathers were large slaveholders. Insofar as I am personally concerned, I can see no difference. The black American and the white American. I welcome my black brother as a fellow American. I don't think there's any such thing as the WASP. There is the white Protestant American in trouble. I myself profess to be a Christian. Of course, I have been raised with a certain amount of prejudice. I've been taught a certain amount of prejudice. But I cannot see in any way of depriving my black brother of any of his rights. I think he is entitled to every right that I am entitled to. I think the black American has been misled.
Mr. Milner?
Yes, sir.
Your radio is on in the background. If you'd be kind enough to turn it down, we would be able to hear you a bit better, sir.
All right. I didn't realize that was my voice on the radio. No, as I say, I am eighth generation Georgian. All four of my great-grandfathers were large slaveholders.
Well, may I ask you a question, sir?
Yeah.
May I ask you a question? You say you're an eighth-generation Georgian, and you said that your people took the Georgian land away from the Indians?
This is correct.
Right, and they were also slaveholders. Now, are you proud of this tradition?
I am not. proud of the fact that my ancestors were slaveholders. I am proud of the fact that my ancestors have made America America. My ancestors were among some of the original settlers in the United States and in the colonies. I'm a direct descendant of William Pitt. I am an indirect descendant of William Pitt the Younger.
So you're proud of the contribution your ancestors have made to the country, right?
By all means.
All right. Now, you stated also that you were taught a certain amount of prejudice, but this teaching has not interfered with your feeling that black people should have an equal opportunity. Is that right?
This is correct. I am an educated man.
Well, what I'd like to ask you, since there are a number of people who were taught prejudice and were taught to practice discrimination, what can be done to make these people accept the blacks as you have?
Education, in a word. Education is the key to the whole thing. I worked my way through 7 years of college. Nobody handed me anything on a silver platter. I am proud of the fact that I was able to work my way through 7 years of college. I am now an employee of the United States Department of Agriculture. I have a relative who is in welfare work. But I will not disclose who or where, but I agree with the earlier interview that it's rather disgusting to see the welfare recipient drive up in a Cadillac, and I can't drive a Cadillac myself.
But you're not talking about all welfare recipients, sir. You know, we're talking about, I don't think that is any fairer than talking about a bank teller who may have embezzled a few thousand dollars. We don't put all bank tellers down. We just say that happens to have been a human weakness at that particular point, and we met out whatever the punishment should be. But I'm very interested in one other aspect of your conversation. So you state that education can solve most of this. Now, are you talking about education of whites or education of blacks? Of both races.
Of both races.
Mr. Horowitz, how do you feel?
Well, I found, you know, the whole statement of Mr. Milner fascinating. I think the key thing, what he said, is, you know, that people are entitled to. That's part of the standard American rhetoric and attitude, that if they utter something that has, you know, the quality of piety or righteousness, that somehow it will be enacted and done. Sort of a, you know, self-fulfilling kind of prophecy. It was just nonsense. The fact of, you know, what's happening today in America, you know, puts the lie to all this. The Negro, the black man, is terrible trouble in the cities. And there's terrible isolation between blacks and whites in many key parts of this country. And there's very real and very terrible danger of what may happen if we can persist in trying to hide this situation, you know, under the cover of rhetoric and under the cover of some call to ancestry or ideals. You know, this is the typical and very, you know, standard way of hiding from the brute and gut reality of what a black man faces today and what he did face in previous years in this country.
Mr. Milner, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to express my opinion.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, our conversation, The Wasp, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in trouble. Our guest tonight, Mr. Julius Horwitz, and this time we'll go out to Omaha, Nebraska. Mrs. Yeager is hearing Night Call over KBON. Mrs. Yeager?
Yes, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to express my thanks to your station and to your guest, and to you also, Mr. Shields. I think you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
It's a constructive program, and I think that it's going to help solve a lot of our problems. What I was would like to refer to is the God-fearing people that worship God, and a church that bans the Negro, because, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, and if I am, why, I'd like to be corrected, that they say there was a curse by God placed on the Negro, and they became black. Now, what is black? Why is that an evil color? Black is a beautiful color. I like the color black. I have clothes and my dresses and things. Now, what is there wrong about being black?
Well, first, the theory about there was Bible substantiation of a curse upon the black man is not true at all. One of the largest Christian bodies in the country, the Southern Baptists, who at one time perpetuated this theory, has now stated that there is no Bible fact at all to it, that black people were cursed by Ham, if this was the story, that it's not carried at all. It has been a myth, and it's no longer accepted.
Isn't
it's no longer...
this a sad state of affairs when these people still practice that? I mean...
Well, I think it's a sad state of affairs when we look at the country and look at what we've done to the Indian. But I think that as we look at the country today in 1968, there is a slow but growing awareness on the parts of both black and white people that if the country is going to succeed and if the country is really going to be the American dream for all, that we all will have to start doing something to help each other.
And when we speak of education, at school, you know, you can buy them books and send them to school and they still don't learn anything. The education has to come, it has to be it's a moral question. Each individual has to educate himself to the fact that we are all equal, we're under one God, and the color, if we're all skin, we look alike, and color means nothing. And well, when they come to that, and the country realizes that, then we are going to get someplace.
Well, I don't want to take the time away from our guest, Mr. Horwitz, but I'd just like to add this. I think this is the kind of education that's needed. There are so many people who say that if more black people could get education, that this would solve the problem. And there are many blacks who have educations, who have doctorate degrees, and who have other high degrees, who are still being discriminated against in many areas. When we're talking about education, I think we're talking about an awareness and an attempt to understand the other, an attempt to some degree try to give the person dignity and respect. I think if this is the kind of education, I think we might talk about a more liberal education in human relations.
Yes.
Mr. Horwitz, I'm taking your time, so I don't mean to.
I was just going to say, in the novel, you know, my novel, The Wasp, this is a thing that always baffles Emerson when he's speaking to the lawyer, you know, S.T. West.
Especially in that part where he's talking, where he talks about he's always reminded of his blackness.
He's reminded, and he keeps saying to West, you know, why can't we sit down? You know, they go to a cocktail lounge, and they talk, and they have dinner. And he says, you're always asking me questions, like we're holding a debate. He says, why can't you just speak to me simply? Or are we going to spend a lifetime? You know, how am I going to talk to you for the next 30 years? Are we always going to debate? Or is there going to come a time when we're going to talk to each other like men? And, you know, West is sort of thrust by this kind of thing.
Well, Mr. Horwitz, I just respect you and admire you for this monumental task that you're assuming, because I know that eventually these things will be worked out, maybe not in our generation, but we're getting places, I think, slowly.
I would agree with you.
Thank you very much.
And I hope you'll buy the book, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Our conversation tonight is The Wasp, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in trouble. And our guest is Mr. Julius Horwitz. We'll return to our guest following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, Can the Blacks Get Organized? With James Farmer, former national director and co-founder of CORE, the Congress for Racial Equality. Mr. Farmer and the Second American Revolution have come some distance in the past few years. He just lost a congressional election to a woman, Shirley Chisholm, incidentally the first black woman ever to be elected to Congress. Mr. Farmer is now professor of social welfare at Lincoln University, as well as adjunct professor of the same thing at NYU. Instead of leading demonstrations in Bogalusa, now he's offering high-level advice to the black man and his organizations as a sort of senior statesman of the civil rights movement. James Farmer, Can the Blacks Get Organized? Tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for Yourself Collect from anywhere in North America to guest, novelist, social welfare critic Julius Horwitz about racism, the white man's hang-up, the black man's burden. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. Julius Horwitz, tonight, and this time we'll go out to Big Spring, Texas. Reverend Roark is hearing Night Call over KBYG. Reverend Roark?
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Your question?
We'd like to address our question to Mr. Howard. Recently, you may or may not have heard of the sit-in in the Dallas Welfare Office of women who were on welfare. A judge had ruled against them, since there was no father in the home, that if there was a father in the home, welfare payments could not be increased, and the black militants were there giving advice. This seems to be quite a threat to the WASP in this particular area. The police were called out and so forth. I've not heard a recent report on it today, but I would like to hear your response to this.
Well, it's interesting because I'm working on this problem right now, and part of the cruelty of welfare in this country is that under the ADC program, the father is in many cases literally driven out of the home. And for example, here in New York City, you have about 500,000 children who are living in homes where there's no father. And I think the most important and exciting thing that can happen in welfare in this country is to bring the deserting father back into the home, to do everything possible to have a man in the house. And that the people who run welfare in this country have to forget all their old notions about rules and all the legal nonsense that is stultified the ADC program. Welfare is coming out of its kind of bondage now. And what the women were doing, I didn't see the story today, but what I can guess what the women are doing in Dallas is protesting a welfare system that denies them a normal life. Yes. And this is happening all over the country, and this is the biggest news about welfare that's going on now. That the poor who are on welfare are crying out, really, for the first time in the history of this nation, they're crying out for recognition, and they want their rights, and they want their rights as they're written under law. And under law, people have a great many legal rights in welfare which have been denied to them for decades. Yeah. And but to get back to the original question, I think that every effort should be made to keep the man in the house, if at all possible. And this is a program that I'm going to be working on very soon.
Yes, this is interesting. I appreciate your response, and your statement about rules struck another key. I was a student in Georgia for 3 years, Atlanta, in Gainesville, and a friend in Gainesville was doing a study there in the city of people who had been on welfare, and he seemed to come up with the idea that it was almost a form of heredity. If a grandparent was on welfare, then the the son would be on the welfare, and then eventually the grandson would be on welfare, that he seems to come up with the idea that ignorance breeds poverty and poverty breeds ignorance.
No, well, that's a simple-minded notion about welfare, and there's a terrible amount of ignorance in this country about welfare,
Yes. What
welfare really is and what it does to people. Of course, if you keep people in what I call an environment of failure and a constant expectancy of failure, and if you deny children a normal childhood and they're exposed to the most vicious kind of environment in cities and in rural counties, the children are going to grow up, and particularly if they grow up in homes without a father, where they never see a father, where they never see work being done, they never see a paycheck, you know, the pay being spent on a Friday evening, they never see new things brought into the house. Under this kind of environment, it would be utterly, you know, stupid to expect people, you know, to break free of it and to come out, you know, like bright young Harvard students or Yale students. No, there's the welfare system itself has in it built-in failures that perpetuates the...
It's such a degrading thing for a family to go and ask for welfare and to ask prying questions and to examine your home and your clothes closet.
Well, that's going to change now. The affidavit system is becoming an operation throughout the country. But I think, you know, more important than, you know, the affidavit or anything else that's going on in welfare is, you know, what's going to happen to the children who are living in a welfare environment, and what efforts is the country making to lift these children out of this kind of self-perpetuating environment of failure. This is the really key problem in welfare. It's not whether a guy has a Cadillac or a woman has a mink coat or half a dozen people cheat. People cheat everywhere, you know, in this country. So why should one be surprised if a person cheats occasionally on welfare?
Reverend Roark, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The people as a whole should not be deprived because there are a few who will take advantage.
Of course.
Appreciate the opportunity and appreciate your opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Good night.
This is Night Call in New York. Our next call from Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Larson is hearing Night Call over WGY from Schenectady, New York. Mr. Larson?
Oh, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, I would certainly appreciate Mr. Horowitz's presentation, and I do think that that the WASP is one of the things that we should be concerned about. I do think that it is one of the motivating aberrations, and of course, I think that these problems are all interrelated, that pollution and our foreign policy and the WASP attitude towards the black man, I think these are all interrelated, and that I do think that this problem does have to be analyzed, and that the WASP, the fact is that the WASP has always needed a minority, apparently, and this phenomenon of white and black and the WASP, the WASP hysteria and concern for cleanliness, I'm sure all of these things we can see derive from the philosophy, the WASP philosophy of Puritanism. So these are things that really have to be analyzed. And I think really that we need an entire new reality in this country. And if the black man, I think perhaps I might diverge from you, Mr. Horowitz, a bit here. I think that the black man should be encouraged to find his identity, to by all means disengage from this WASP pathology.
No, I have, you know, no quarrel with you that the black man should find his identity and, you know, in a sense, disengage himself from the pathology of the white man who has all these delusions about race and what race is. No, there's no. The point I made earlier in the program was this, that above and beyond everything else, the black man is an American. This is his home.
Of course.
You see, and he can't think of it as alien to him. He can't deny himself his own home, because then he's playing right back into the thousand and one subtleties that maintain isolation from the white man, from white and black.
Right, right. As long as he can remake it in his own style and with his own identity. Of course, of course. And, yes.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and this time out to Indianapolis, Indiana. Mrs. Lacey is hearing Night Call over WTLC-FM. Mrs. Lacey?
Yes?
Good evening.
How are you?
Good evening, madam.
Fine. My question to you is this. Is why is it that it appears as though, to me, I will say, maybe not to others, there continues to be, and I posed this question just recently at a convocation, that there seems to be such a very futile system of welfare, with the realization that society makes welfare. I don't know whether they realize this or not. Society in itself creates welfare in that they keep the Negro deprived to the point he does not have the advantages to reach the economical and sociological statuses. And therefore, he has to rely on welfare. Yet the white man says, we are tired of all of these people on welfare. There is going to be a continuous situation of this unless there is a rehabilitation program. And in your rehabilitation program, it does not necessarily mean that you have got to reach the laborers. There are very skilled persons available to fulfill positions that they are not going to accept under the present conditions that exist. And yet, they realize we go right back to the feudal system of welfare. And when I say bit feudal, for instance here, you still have a trustee township. Who ever heard in these days and times of a trustee township? When most cities have a county, state, and federal, more or less, welfare agency.
Mrs. Lacey,
and
let's ask.
Understand this.
Mrs.
Your
Lacey.
City is for state is for people having met residential requirements. Who can receive state assistance, if they are cut off, you cannot cut them off without referring them to another subsistence agency which will give them help, which is the city. Well,
Mrs. Lacey, I think you've not only asked the question, I think you've just about answered it. And our guest has just about 30 seconds, so we thank you for calling, and we'll ask him to respond if he can in the 30 seconds remaining. Thank you for calling, ma'am. Mr. Horwitz?
Well, I would just say that there's a tremendous amount of mythology in America about welfare, and I think this mythology is going to be shattered and broken up within, you know, the next coming months. There's great movement in the country on the part of welfare groups to speak out for themselves, to demand their legitimate rights, and to break through all the kind of rhetoric and righteousness and pious attitudes.
Mr. Horwitz, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, James Farmer and Can the Blacks Get Organized? Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.